The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC here on ESPN Plus. I feel like I see this every day at the moment. There is so much to get through throughout today's show. We'll be going to Orlando to Stefano Vassaro, who is our man in the bubble, to give us all the latest details on those positive tests for those FC Dallas players. Also, later on in the program, Ali Moreno and Gab Marcotti with me to react to Antoine Griezmann's family taking to social media to criticise Quique Setién. We start, though, in the Premier League. And it was pretty much the perfect day if you're a Manchester United or a Wolves fan, because both Leicester City and Chelsea lost. Chelsea losing by 3-2 against West Ham. Let's start, shall we, by looking at that game. Stevie Nicol, Shaka Hislop, Frank Leboeuf. I can tell you that Frank used some very fruity language before we came on air to describe Chelsea's performance. Frank, could you maybe use that, say it again, but not quite so anti-Disney?
Yes, I will, for sure. Well, that was a complete stupid Chelsea, if I may say that. Didn't give the best, was in possession of the ball, dominating the game, but making so many errors. And I want to put my hat off to Mr. Michael Antonio, who completely dominated two defenders, Christensen and especially Rudiger. Should have had a penalty, but kept on working hard and scored a second goal. I mean, with all due respect to West Ham, because West Ham did what they had to do. They fought until the end. There's nothing to say to them or to criticize them. But Chelsea thought they were more superior and didn't show it during that game. Didn't finish the action. Were so slow, no pace. And I'm frustrated on top of being upset, because we are on the almost the last line before the arrival. And they didn't do what they had to do to get the 3 points and make sure that they still have the gap of 5 points and go in front of Leicester. They punished themselves and they deserve to lose with the performance they gave to today. And I'm sure Frank Lampard must be as upset as I am.
Stevie, they came into this game, West Ham, having lost three matches in a row. Was this complacency? Is Frank right? Did Chelsea just think that they could just swan in and win this?
No, not at all. I don't agree with that. Listen, if you think that you have to go away from home and score three goals to get a point, then clearly the problem is defensively. And that's not something new. I know I've been talking about it. As good as they are going forward, and they could have scored three or four goals today. And if you're scoring three or four goals away from home, you're not doing too badly. But at the back, you know, Mikel Antonio, as big a heart and as big a physical presence as he is, he doesn't have the touch to go along with those other things that he has. And what you do against a guy like him is you use your football brain. And we saw today that Rudiger and Christensen do not have a football brain. They did everything to make it easy for him. They gave him space so that he could pick the ball up short. They didn't get tight enough when they had to for balls over the top. And then they got too tight in the times when they shouldn't be. You know, a big physical guy like him, he wants you to be really tight so he knows where you are. You've got to use your brains. And I have to say, as good as Frank has been so far, him and Jody Moore as coaches with going forward, I think you saw a weakness in them today, because this is really easily sorted. All you have to do is one of two things. You either make sure that Kante sits in front of Antonio and screens him, and if he's not there, then one of the centre-backs screens him and the other one goes in behind. It's called one in front, one behind. That means the only ball that's beating you is a big long ball away over the back, and you should be able to deal with that. I think that's down to the coaches, because they never saw it and they never changed it.
Stevie, if it's that obvious to you, why isn't it obvious to them?
Well, because teams don't do that. You know, I hear people talking all the time about, oh, the game's moved on. Well, I tell you what, the game may have moved on in certain areas, but it's also gone backwards in others. And that's one of them. You know, teams don't know how to defend properly anymore. You know, listen, I joined the European Champions, and it was the first thing I learned. Defending when you're going forward is just as important. When you have the ball, it's important that you defend properly. And that was the first thing I learned. The two centre-backs, either one in front, one behind, or they pull the full-back, or they pull somebody in front to stop a ball just getting knocked out. And then all of a sudden, teams are getting at you.
Shaka, when Pulisic went down and they won the penalty and Chelsea scored, I don't think there are many Hammers fans who thought, you know what, from what we've seen over recent weeks, they're going to rally, they're going to come back, they're going to win this by 3-2. But fair play to your old side.
Yeah, I thought they did very well, especially after having the what should have been the opening goal disallowed as it was. And then Pulisic, who was easily Chelsea's best player, running at not Igbona, Diop as he did, and drew the foul. I thought that the game was over right then. But it was good for Suchek to respond as he did just before the break. And then in the second half, this was about West Ham playing to their strengths. And listen, I find today a strange day to be criticising Mikel Antonio. First of all, West Ham are a totally different proposition defensively with Igbona on the park than not. And you saw that. They looked confident and comfortable defensively. And the only real threat came from the runs coming from deep of Pulisic, who I just mentioned. And then that opened up a mighty old gap for Rudiger and Christensen to defend against Mikel Antonio, who I thought was incredible. Held the ball up well, waited for runners, and was just too much of a handful for Rudiger, as good a player as he is. And West Ham took their chances right when they came. And Yarmolenko came in, and again, you see that gap in between their two centre-backs and their midfield as they press looking for winners, and it just left them exposed. West Ham, I thought, got the just rewards and not a day to criticise anybody in Claret and Blue.
Frank, do you agree with Stevie? Was Frank Lampard somewhat exposed today tactically?
I agree with Stevie on that. What I agree with Stevie is that he thinks that because you have three or four chances to score away from home, you did pretty well. I mean, and after he makes a big lies about the fact that Chelsea didn't defend well, where I think away from home, that's the first things that you have to do, defend well. Can you imagine that you are at the 90th minute and you concede a goal in counter-attack when you play away from home? Even if you think that you can win, you have to make sure that you're enough defensively. And I think about Marcos Alonso, when the action is on the right side, where is he going? Why is he not going back to defend and come back too late? I don't understand why those players don't think about defending when they are defenders. And that's why I'm upset. I totally agree with Stevie the way they defended Christensen and Rudiger on Antonio. That was absolutely insane. I mean, I always talk to Steve Clark or Marcel Desailly or Michael Dubery. Okay, when you have a guy, a strong guy like that, you go in front, I go at the back, I cover you, we squeeze him to make sure that he doesn't control the ball because it's going to be too easy for him to do so. I don't understand why Frank Lampard didn't adjust that, because that was ridiculous the way they defended. On the third goal, I mean, that's crazy, because Rudiger, I don't know what he's doing. He's like 20 yards away from his partner and let Yarmolenko going anywhere and score a goal. So, yeah, I'm upset because I think it's not the way I was taught to defend away from home.
Two other things from this game. The first, a positive once again for Chelsea. It has to be Pulisic. Once again, an argument that he was their best player, Stevie.
I don't think it's in question. He got the penalty. He got the free kick for the two goals he did get. He actually got himself, he ghosted into a little spot right on the edge of the penalty area in the first half where I thought he actually probably at least should have hit the target. And he was lively. So, yeah, he really was a threat for Chelsea today, no question. He was their main forward, no doubt about that.
Meanwhile, Shaq, it doesn't really matter now, given that West Ham went on to win the game, but their opening goal was chalked off after 3.5 minutes VAR took to look at it and decide that, in fact, there was an offside within it. Was it the right decision? Quite a lot of debate on Twitter about this.
Well, listener, I'm not sure if I'm going to clear any of this up, especially given how biased I am about it. I think Michael Antonio plays
a yes
ball,
or no
from an onside position and then falls into an offside position in doing so, and doesn't play the ball after that. And I'm not sure that he interferes with the defender, but he's there and close enough to cause enough of a distraction, so I could see why it was given. But I'm going to disagree. I don't see how you play the ball in an offside position, and then because you fall over in doing so, you then judge him to be offside. It doesn't make sense to me.
It's not. I think, Shaka, I'm sorry, it's not the problem of being offside or not. I think it's the problem of not leaving a free space to Azpilicueta or Kepa. That's why the ref denied the ball. Because, of course, it's offside.
Why was given, Frank? What I'm saying is he goes to play the ball. When he first attempts to play the ball, he's in an onside position and falls over. And he has a swing at it and falls over. At that point, he doesn't make another attempt to play the ball. He doesn't make an attempt to block Azpilicueta or Kepa.
So you think it's the right decision, Stevie?
The ball hits him.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, it was the right decision. Listen, I'm not quite sure what they've actually come out and said as the official, but I can tell you, if you watch it again, when Antonio is lying on the ground, the ball comes down and hits him on the side that knocks it towards Kuzmic.
Stevie, I have the official, would you like to hear it? It says that Antonio was in an offside position and directly in the line of vision of Kepa.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you what, if they want to use that, they can. But I'm telling you, if you don't agree with that, then he was offside anyway. Because when the ball hit him, when he was on the ground, and it went away from goal to Kuzmic, that made him offside. So you can take your pick, whichever one you want.
Last point on this.
Sorry, Dan. I don't agree with that, because I think he's not in a position of offside because he doesn't touch the ball. The second one, he doesn't touch the ball.
He doesn't watch it 10 times, Frankie.
Azpilicueta cannot attack Suchek, and it's why I think he's disallowed. But it could not be in a way that he's offside, because when Suchek kicks the ball, Antonio doesn't touch the ball anymore. So he's not offside.
But he's interfering with play. That was what was judged by the referees. Frank, last point on Chelsea. What do you do with Willian? Do you give him a new contract?
Well, the thing is, I was thinking about that, but I think they really have a problem, because Pulisic is getting better and better. And when everybody thinks that Werner is going to come, Ziyech is going to come, Giroud signed a new contract. We don't know if Abraham's going to go or not. So what are you going to do with Willian? Willian is a fantastic player, and he showed today with 2 goals and his performance that, of course, he's not as good as Pulisic right now, because Pulisic is really fantastic right now. But he's important in the squad. He gives a change of rhythm, he gives a pace, he gives technique as well, and involvement in the game. So I would have said like before the pandemic, now it's time for Willian to go. But since the restart, I have to say that it's a question mark, because he's doing great and maybe he deserves an offer from Chelsea. But it's up to them.
Meanwhile, as I mentioned at the top, a bad day for Leicester as well, losing away against Everton by 2-1. What's happened to Leicester, Frank?
Well, hard to understand. We see the ghost of Vardy. We don't see Maddison the way he used to play. I don't know. It's they're not into the game since the restart. They forget some basics about football, and at the end of the day, they don't win any games anymore. So of course they react in the second half, but it's too late. It's really too late, and I think. Good for them that Chelsea doesn't perform. What's going to happen with Manchester United or Wolverhampton? But if they carry on like that, they can finish sixth if they don't react before the end.
How do you explain it, Stevie? Like Jamie Vardy, as Frank said, again, kind of anonymous in this match. What's going on?
Well, Vardy in particular needs service. You know, he's not going to do. He's not going to get that many goals on his own. So he needs some service, and right now he's not getting any from anybody. And as far as the attacking third of the field's concerned, we spoke about this yesterday, they have dried up. You know, if you want to be in the top four and get in the Champions League, then they're going to have to start winning games. And to do that, they're going to have to start creating chances and scoring goals. And when you step on the field and have three shots on target and one of them is actually the goal, which is a complete fluke that smashes off Iheanacho's face. So basically for 90 minutes, a team chasing the top four has got two shots on target. That ain't cutting it. All their problems are going forward and they've completely dried up. They need to get on the training field and get some movement because right now they look static.
Right then, Shaq, third, fourth, fifth and sixth. Give me your order.
Third, I am going to go... I feel Manchester United get third, Chelsea fourth, and Wolves fifth. I think Leicester just continue to plummet.
Wow, 3 points separate them. City 55, Chelsea 54, with United on 54, Wolves 52 as well. Frank?
Yeah, I would have to agree.
Really?
I would have to agree. Yeah, I don't know between Manchester United and Chelsea, but I think the most important thing is to see Leicester losing the possibility of playing in the Champions League next season. And I don't see them reacting. So, yeah, same as Shaka.
Mr. Anti-Manchester United, Mr. Liverpool Goggles.
Listen, right now, it's very difficult to see... to give a reason why United don't get in the top four. I think we shouldn't forget Wolves. Wolves have got momentum as well. Leicester are completely sinking big time. And Chelsea, although they lost today, I think they'll still win enough games to stay in the top four. I'm going to say Man United get in the top four and Leicester drops out.
Just a word on Arsenal, a 4-0 victory over Norwich today. Steve, it's kind of weird, isn't it? Because it's Norwich.
Yeah, it seems a little harsh to say it's just Norwich because at the end of the day, you know, they made some chances, they scored some good goals, they passed the ball well, they played some nice football. You know, it's very difficult to kind of poo-poo a result like that, but I guess I'm going to because it was just complete.
And Shaka, defend the first goal for me.
I can't. Listen, Tim Krul is an experienced goalkeeper and arguably has been Norwich's best player this season. But when you're down at the bottom, rule number one is you don't give away cheap goals, especially the first goal. And that's exactly what Tim Krul did. It was simply ridiculous. And then add to that the second goal where the play builds up with Aaron sitting in Godfrey's lap pretty much and leaving the entire... left side open for Arsenal, and then the ball kind of got a strike as it was from Granit Xhaka, goes under Tim Krul. It was over. It was just a matter of, at that point, the game is done. Norwich are lost. And it's just a matter of by how many. And that's what you saw, and Arsenal filled their boots.
State the obvious award now, I know goes to me, Frank, but boy, do Arsenal need to keep hold of Aubameyang.
Yes, because he's a fantastic player, because they need leaders, and because he's going to score a goal for them. But the main problem for Arsenal, even if they have many problems, I think is to resolve the problem of the central defense. I mean, we say that for City, we say that for Chelsea, but we especially say that for Arsenal. I mean, against Norwich is okay, but to have David Luiz and Mustafi central defense, I'm not sure you can go very far.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. More from Frank and Shaka today on Extra Time. We'll be asking Frank about his medical tales from the past. You can check that out over on our YouTube channel. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
Barcelona fans won't need reminding. This is how La Liga table looks after that 2-2 draw against Atleti at the Camp Nou. Real Madrid 1 point clear. In action on Thursday at home against Getafe, the fallout has been loud and widespread over the last 24 hours in Catalonia. Let's start, shall we, with that big decision of Setien not to bring on Antoine Griezmann until the 90th minute. This is what he had to say after the game about that. The problem is not everyone can play. We didn't bring him on because the team was doing well. It's difficult to find a place for Griezmann without destabilizing the team. I won't say sorry because it's about decisions, but I understand he may feel bad and I feel bad for him because he's a great person and a great professional. Gab Marcotti and Ali Moreno alongside me. Boys, before I get your opinion on that quote, we also heard from Antoine Griezmann's father on Instagram saying, in order to apologise, you first need the keys of the lorry. And that is not the case because he is simply a passenger. A lot to unpack here. Ali, where would you like to start?
Well, let's start with Quique Setién and him talking about it is hard to find a place for Antoine Griezmann on the field. Well, this is the same person and the same manager that maybe about a couple of weeks ago, if that, he came out and gave Antoine Griezmann the dreaded vote of confidence in saying that he would play for the team and he would be out on the field because he's an important figure as to what Barcelona does out on the field. Well, which one is it, Quique Setién? Is Griezmann important to the team or not important enough to have him out there in what was essentially the most important game you have played up until this point against Atletico Madrid? And so the truth is that Antoine Griezmann doesn't really fit in Barcelona, not as they are currently constructed. And that's why we see him struggle in the way that we have seen him struggle throughout the course of the season. And because of that, you have to make tough choices. But if you're the manager of a team like Barcelona, I don't feel like you have to come out and explain your decisions. Mm. However, people are going to ask the questions. And if you're going to answer those questions, then don't feel the need to apologize to the player. You go to the player directly and you explain the situation if indeed that's the way you want to deal with it. But you don't have to come out and say, I should apologize to him because he's a great person and a great professional. The reason Antoine Griezmann was brought into Barcelona was because he's a great player. And we just haven't seen anywhere near that with his performances this whole year with Barcelona.
This whole quote is a little nonsense, Gab. In particular, the bit when we didn't bring him on because the team was doing well. You were hanging on against Atletico Madrid. You needed to win this game. You knew that Real Madrid would be big favourites if you didn't take all 3 points. You weren't doing well. Why are you saying that?
Yeah, I mean, I think what he meant was that, you know, he felt the team could see out the game and get the 3 points without him. But I think Ali hit the nail on the head. And I hate to go back to this, and I rarely do it, but you have managers who are in that big club manager, and they have that big club bluster about them. And you have other managers who maybe are nice guys, and nice guys feel bad when, oh, look, you know, I didn't get that guy on the field sooner. And, you know, Setién, in a perfect world, Setién would be the kind of manager who's confident enough and secure enough to say, look, It's my rear end on the line, not yours. I thought we were better off without Griezmann. He hasn't exactly lit it up. It's on me. If you don't like where we are at the end of the season, then go ahead and fire me if you've got the guts to do that. But I'm not going to apologize to him or answer specific questions here. He doesn't do that. It's not in his DNA. He has to offer up explanations. And when you do that, you come across looking weak and these people smell blood.
Ali, how would you feel if your father took to Instagram to defend you?
I have to say, maybe this is a sign of the times, but I cannot, in my lifetime, picture my father coming out and saying these things. If he indeed was evaluating my performances with an unbiased view and saying, well, you haven't played all that well. So if anything, my father would take the position of like, yeah, I wouldn't have played him either. No, he's not playing well. He doesn't deserve to be out on the field. Instead, we take this approach that somehow Antoine Griezmann is entitled to a starting position. And the truth is that his performances haven't warranted that. The only thing that I would say about Antoine Griezmann being on the field against Atletico Madrid is the fact that not because of whatever Griezmann has done, but because whatever Luis Suarez was not able to do, because physically he seemed to be struggling. And so you needed somebody who, at the very least, could move with some sort of freedom, whereas Suarez was impeded physically and visibly so. You could at least, in Antoine Griezmann, have a body that can actually run, which is a minimum requirement to play this game.
But Ali, see, there you go back to the fact that Setien is Setien. I mean, I agree with you. If you look at it that way, in terms of who can play center forward, apart from Luis Suarez and run around and make those runs, especially when Suarez, you know, clearly was unfit, it's Griezmann. But then if you put Griezmann on and then things don't work out for you, then you have to go and answer, why did you take off Luis Suarez? And then maybe, you know, maybe Messi isn't happy that Suarez came off, and then it blows up in your face. And so in some ways, it's easier to just leave Griezmann on the bench than make a tough decision like to take off Suarez in a game like that.
Gab, are we in any sort of world in which Setien could get sacked before the Champions League resumes in August?
I don't think so. I think it would have to be some sort of major falling out with senior players. Look, the stakes are high, but, you know, they're still there. They still have a Champions League to play for, and believe it or not, they still have a Liga to play for as well. So I just don't think it would be seen as particularly serious on the part of Bartomeu and the people around him to go and make it, you know, three managers in a season for Barcelona when they are still technically so close to the top and so close to the finish line in the Champions League as well.
You gave it a 65-35, I think, in our last La Liga conversation. I imagine that's changed now, Gab.
It's changed, but you know what? It hasn't changed tremendously. Maybe I'll push it up to 75. You know, Real Madrid are definitely in a stronger position, but, you know, there are some tough teams out there. These aren't walkovers. And again, Getafe, Javier Bordalas and everything, I don't see that as a gimme by any stretch. In fact, it might be arguably the toughest hurdle Real Madrid has faced since the restart.
Ali, just one last point on this, and it was interesting that Gab brought it up. You look at people like Ancelotti, Zinedine Zidane, who people say, yeah, they're good man management, that's about it. It kind of shows how important that is, doesn't it? Like it's something maybe we take for granted, that anyone can walk into a locker room full of superstars and get results.
Well, there's a certain presence to a manager. There is a certain character that when that guy walks into the locker room, whatever you're doing as a player, you stop doing it and you pay attention. I'm not certain that Quique Setién is that guy and that his assistant Sarabia is that guy. Because what we have seen, and it's been widely reported, is that when they walk into the locker room, people start kind of doing their own thing and ignoring what these guys are trying to put forth. And you know right then and there that there is a real lack of communication and a real lack of respect that you wouldn't have for guys like Ancelotti and Zidane, because just to the fact of who they are, and just so the fact of what they have meant and the things that they have achieved at the level of player and manager and the respect that they command once they get into that sort of environment. I just don't think that Quique Setién has achieved those levels of success. And those players who are in that locker room are saying, I'm not sure this guy really knows what he's doing. And when that thought and that sentiment creeps into a locker room as powerful as Barcelona's locker room, it is so incredibly difficult. In fact, it's impossible to get it back.
Boys, thank you very much. It could be a completely different conversation tomorrow, couldn't it? Real Madrid lose against Getafe and La Liga will be well and truly back on. We'll be looking back at that game in Spain on the next edition of the show.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Let's turn our attention to what happened in Italy today. Goodness me, Inter hitting six past bottom of the table Brescia. Meanwhile, Milan just about scraping a 2-2 draw against Spal, leaving them in seventh, 2 points adrift of Napoli in sixth. Oi, Gab, they don't run the score up in Italy. What happened?
Oh, I think Inter had a lot of frustration and a lot of anger pent up inside them after the Parma performance, and they unloaded all of it in this game. I mean, look, Brescia know that they're down, and it might just be coincidence, but six different Inter players scored those six goals. I think Conte was just so furious after the Parma game, which they won, by the way.
Yeah.
Of course.
Just.
That, you know, he just said, show me something.
Well, you should have said that earlier in the season, Ali. It worked brilliantly.
Yeah, and you look at this performance and this game and the intensity with which Antonio Conte was coaching out in the silence, you would have thought they were playing against Juventus. He was screaming. He was yelling. He was active. And maintaining a level of, I would say, demand from his players. And look, it doesn't matter who we're playing. We have to play at a certain level ourselves, and we're going to keep going forward. And that's what they did, and they kept scoring goals. If I were to highlight a player out of this match, I would say Alexis Sanchez, who for the first time in a very long time, and I mean a very long time, he looked alive. He looked like his legs were there. He looked quick and speedy over distance and in short space and scored a goal and a nice assist in the first goal. Nice finish by Ashley Young. And you're thinking, man, where has this been? Because we know that for the last couple of years, he's looked half dead. But today, he looked like he had gone back a couple of years. And now, all of a sudden, you're thinking, maybe there's still something left for Alexis Sanchez. However, the bar cannot be Brescia, and the game that you're going to use to evaluate Alexis Sanchez and his performance with Inter should not be Brescia. On the whole, just a very, very dominant performance for Inter, and one that you would have hoped you would have seen from them more consistently when they were actually in the race to win this whole thing.
Alexis Sanchez, guy, he's not going to stay there, is he?
Well, the funny thing about Alexis Sanchez, just... and I appreciate it. This is so Inter. You know, he's getting good and he's contributing, just as they're going to have to send him back to Manchester United. Inter confirming that they've been able to extend his loan until the end of the season in Serie A, which is going to be August 2nd or 3rd that weekend. But no more than that, which means that he won't be able to play for them in the Europa League. Part of the reason there probably also because, of course, United also in the Europa League, and they probably don't want to face him as an opponent. So, you know, it's Sod's Law with Inter there. Just as they finally unlock what Alexis can do, you know, he's getting ready to pack his bag.
Meanwhile, the other side of the city. As always, Ali, we start to get excited about Milan thing. You know, they've been looking good of late. Maybe could even make a push for Europe. And then all of a sudden they put in a performance like today and it needed that crazy late goal to see the equaliser. What was wrong with them today?
The final third for Milan was just awful. The final pass, the final delivery, the finish, they may have had 30, 35 attempts on goal. It felt like it was 100 attempts on goal, but it didn't feel like most of those attempts were actually on target. And you think of the possession that they had, and after Spal get a man thrown out, the Alessandro late in the first half, it was all full domination by Milan, but that final third and the execution of that final pass and that final touch was not there. But I tell you, where there was a great execution was in the second goal by Spal Flocati, who on the baby bounce, this ball is just sitting beautifully for him, and he hits it, loops it over Donnarumma, and what a goal it was. You may not have thought that Spal should be in the standings where they are, the way they were playing in the first half, and then the second half came, and essentially you saw a team that just ran out of legs, could not defend anymore, and Milan eventually, not because they were good, but because they just kept pushing numbers forward, eventually they pushed a couple of goals in, one with the help from Spal, 2-2. Exciting game, but not a particularly well-played game.
Gap.
So, just to add to what Ali said, look, Spal obviously fighting to avoid relegation. They actually rested, what, four or five starters for this game. So it was actually partly the Spal B team that went out there and took a 2-0 lead over Milan. I want to give Milan just a little bit of defensive. I'm going to sort of give them a half pass defensively because, of course, you know, that first goal was a bit of a car crash where they couldn't clear the ball and Gabbia and whatnot. But the second goal, by the way, Sergio Flocari, that man, it's his first goal of the season, and I believe he's older than Ali. I think he's 38 years old, Sergio Flocari. Certainly, metabolically
older. No, he's
older.
Not older than me. No, Gap.
But close enough. But anyway, so, you know, this is Twilight Zone stuff already. And then Milan tried to get back into it. I thought they created enough chances to win objectively. But you know what? Creating the chances is most of the battle, but it's not the whole battle. You have to finish them. And now the big question is, when they've got this big game against Lazio coming up, to what degree does this actually derail them? Because they would have pulled level with Napoli, at least momentarily, had they taken all 3 points.
Meanwhile, I just want to turn the clock back 24 hours because I've got to ask you, Ali, normally you do your top 10 goals. Not very often we have top 3 goals from the same match, from the same team. But I think it's worthy today to talk us through it. Should we start with third? Yeah, let's go with third, shall we?
Third, Paulo Dybala.
Right.
And the reason it's only third is because while the build-up to the play and the cutback by Dybala and the way that he gets around the defender would have taken to first, the finish, there's a little deflection by the goalkeeper, which kind of takes the finish away a little bit from Dybala. It takes from the aesthetics of the goal just a tiny bit, and so therefore it gets pushed to third. And the only reason it gets pushed to third is because the other two are just ridiculous. I'm going to go number two, Cristiano Ronaldo, where he puts his laces through the ball. Ball is dancing past the goalkeeper, courtesy dive, never getting there. And so much so a courtesy dive that for number one, he didn't even bother diving the goalkeeper because Douglas Costa put that, well, where my grandmother hangs her clothes. It was just gorgeous from Douglas Costa. I'll go Dybala, Ronaldo, Douglas Costa in that order.
Yeah, that angle behind the Costa goal is fantastic. Do you agree, Gab? Would you have the same 1, 2, 3?
See, I don't know. I miss the subtleties that Ali, as a striker, points out, that the goalkeeper getting a hand to Dybala's. I would have probably had Dybala's higher. But then again, Cristiano's was just unbelievable. And just before that, Cristiano had a shot that was actually saved, but where he has like the quickest release you've ever seen. And he just hits the ball so hard out of nothing. I mean, in addition to all the other things he does, I don't need Cristiano's fans telling me that I'm being reductive, but I think very few players strike the ball as well as he does. And then obviously,
so I asked you for the top. I asked you for the top three goals, and you mentioned a goal that isn't a goal that was saved, Gab.
Because that was. I listen. I'm just praising Cristiano. You got a problem with that?
You got a problem in the crazy Cristiano?
I haven't heard you praise Messi for a very long time, here. Gab. That is it. We've had enough of your anti-Messi, pro-Ronaldo propaganda on this show. Thank you very much. Serie A continues. A great doubleheader for you tomorrow. Atalanta taking on Napoli. That's at 1:30, followed by Roma against Udinese. Should be plenty of goals in that game and a lot more talk about what's going on in Italy. The latest edition of the Serie A podcast is available to download now.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Meanwhile, MLS confirmed today that six players from FC Dallas have tested positive for the coronavirus. This ahead, of course, of the MLS's back tournament in Orlando. Stephanie Fusaro is with us, who will be with ESPN and with the players throughout this tournament. Stephanie, let's start, shall we, with that big news. What's the reaction been?
Well, it's been pretty interesting. MLS did finally confirm that through a statement at about 1 o'clock this afternoon Eastern time. And they said that two players from FC Dallas tested positive upon arriving here in the MLS bubble in Orlando, and four additional players tested positive in the last 2 days. Now, the big question is, what's next? They continue. FC Dallas has said that they have proactively isolated those players who tested positive in their hotel rooms. And I did speak to another player from another club that's already here in Orlando, and he says that he's really shocked that this has happened already on just day one of them being here in this bubble, and he said it added anxiety to an already anxious situation for all the players. So we'll really have to kind of see exactly how it affects them when they do start playing and training together as teams.
What's the general vibe there like?
It's pretty interesting, right? I mean, it's nothing like, it's unprecedented. We've never seen anything like this before. Walked into the hotel yesterday and it was very eerie. There's not a lot of people walking around here. We're talking about the Swan and Dolphin Resort at Walt Disney World. This is a place that is usually filled with people, hundreds of people, thousands of people walking around these grounds. And there's really not a whole lot of people here. And it doesn't really seems just awkward to be walking around not seeing a multitude of families and kids getting ready to go to Disney World. So it is kind of interesting what we're seeing.
So what happens? Are there tests every day? How is it kind of being managed?
So the process is that when you do arrive here, you immediately check in and then go to the COVID testing center here on the property. You get a quick COVID test and you immediately have to isolate in your room for 12 hours at least. It's a quarantine. As soon as that's done, one more test the following morning, and then there's a test every other day. And that goes for myself, that goes for all the players, staff, and everybody that's here in the MLS bubble. So yes, a nasal swab test every other day. Not exactly the most fun thing to do nowadays.
No, could certainly have a lot more fun at Disney normally. So yeah. Overall, how strict is the security and everything? I imagine the measures are being adhered to very, very strictly.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you do see players kind of being confined to their certain areas with their teammates. We're able to visit a little earlier a players' lounge that every team has set up. There is a maximum of six people allowed in those players' lounges at a time. Each team has their own. They can only visit their own. So they are being pretty strict with where players and where staff and media can go within the bubble. But, you know, there is going to be some challenges, especially when all the teams arrive. Remember, we only have about five teams here already, with a few more arriving today. We still have a lot more to go.
Let's talk food. How is that dealt with?
Well, it's been interesting, and I'm glad you asked me that because I wanted to clear it up. The tweet went viral yesterday of these boxed lunches that, in reality, it's only the first day when you're quarantined here that you have to receive and have to order these specific boxed lunches that, sure, maybe aren't the best quality food that you will ever see. But at the same time, that is not what the players will be having throughout the entire tournament. Once you're out of that quarantine, you're free to order from any of the restaurants here on the property. And also, you still do have that other menu for the sandwiches and dinner menu as well that MLS is providing. But it's not that box lunch every single day for the players, everybody.
Now, let's talk about some of the big players. Obviously, we're still awaiting the arrivals of the likes of Carlos Vela and Chicharito. They're not going to go, are they?
What I'm hearing is that there is not a good chance, maybe a 50-50 chance, that Carlos Vela will not be here. I can't confirm that, but that's what I have been hearing. There is going to be, I think there is some players that aren't exactly sure if this is the spot for them, whether they want to be here. It's obviously an unprecedented time, and you can't really blame them for some of their reasonings if they don't want to be here throughout a global pandemic.
Being English, I'm obsessed with the weather. It's very hot in Florida, even I know that, and yes, it's like an oven, and July is very much at the peak of that time. What's it like there, and how are we going to have proper football matches in that environment?
Well, first of all, I want to thank our producer here for ESPN FC who told me it was fine for me to wear just polos and not a full suit in this absolute heat. So thank you. Thumbs up for that. But yeah, it's extremely hot. It's going to be a challenge for the players. I feel like the Texas teams and the Florida teams are used to that weather, so they may have a slight advantage there to playing in that heat. But it's hot, and it's going to be hot and humid. And the only reason that we're here inside is because of that heat outside and also the threat of rain, which, of course, Central Florida, right? You could always expect that.
Yeah, of course, because obviously this is kind of the hot tropics sign, the afternoon, you have the thunderstorms. How are the pitches going to hold up? And have you spoken to the players about this sort of, away from everything else that's going on, playing on these pitches in Florida in July?
Yeah, as far as, I think the players at this point, for the most part, they're just excited to get back on the field and to get back onto the pitch and be able to play matches. They have that energy that they're seeing, that they just kind of want to get out to do what they do, and you can't really blame them for that. But they're going to be training in this heat, so they'll be pretty ready for it, I'd say, as ready as you can be to deal with that 95-degree heat with 95% humidity. I'm a Florida boy, so I'm kind of used to it, so I'll talk to the players, make sure that they're ready to go. Don't worry, Dan.
That's all right. Steve Nichol would certainly, I'm sure, flourish in these conditions. Stefano, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate you. You're, of course, going to be with us throughout the next few weeks as this tournament kicks off. For the moment, stay safe. Well, it's a doubleheader for you. It starts July 8th, Orlando City taking on Inter Miami. That's at 8 p.m. Eastern on ESPN, immediately followed by Nashville against Chicago Fire at 10:30. That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everybody who's been on. Be sure, though, to stay tuned. Frank LaBeouf and Shaka Hislop with me to answer your questions on Extra Time. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. I didn't get the memo today, boys. Both dressed in black, looking very smart, very elegant. Shaka, not as much. After the post-Messi era, do you guys think that Barcelona are going to be a team like the current AC Milan team?
Ooh.
Harsh.
I'm gonna go. Not as bad as AC Milan. No. They will struggle. It's quite clear that without Messi, this team is just above average. So I don't see how they continue to compete at the top end of La Liga. And when I say that, I mean just in comparison with Real Madrid. But they're not gonna do Milan. No, they're not.
No. Frank?
Nah.
No, I agree with Shaka. I think on top of it, they have a good academy. So they have good young players going to show up and compensate. Not, of course, the retirement of Messi, but they compensate the loss of some players. We are still looking for them. I mean, Xavi, Iniesta not there anymore. We don't see the Barcelona we saw a couple of years ago. But definitely, like with Ricky Puig, we're going to see young players showing their talent.
At the end of the season, how long did you take off before getting back into training for the next season? Shaka, I imagine you made the most of your time off.
When after the final whistle went for the last game of the season, that was the end until my manager said it was time to show up for preseason. Whatever time that is, that's what I took.
Shaka, final whistle went. Were you literally on a plane to Trinidad and Tobago at the end of that day?
The end of that day. Maybe Sunday or Monday.
Frank, how much time did you take off?
What a shame, Shaka. I thought you were a real professional player. Because I was involved with the national team and most of the time we had tournaments at the end of the season, I would say that I had mostly like 3 weeks off. But after a week or 10 days, I was starting to have some jogs, you know, like just to make sure that the cardio doesn't go that far and make sure that I don't come back with maybe 1 or 2 kilos too much. So yes, I was giving myself like a week or 10 days off.
Indicator as to why. What? We've got a World Cup winner and Shaka.
And no, that's the difference between a player on the field and a goalkeeper.
Right, okay. What, none of the goalkeepers train. They're all lazy like Shaka.
Just move on, Dan. Let's just
definitely.
Move on. Let's just move on, please. Thank you.
Frank, is there any difference playing left or right centre-back?
It is, depending on if you're lefty or righty. Yeah. I play with Marcel Desailly on the left side, and I think I play on the right side with Steve Clark. So, yeah, it's when you play on the right side and you're right-footed, it's much easier than playing left side with being a right-footed. It's why when you have a combined two center half with one lefty, one righty, it's perfect. But yeah, it's different because different of angle, different of position, and you have sometimes to use your bad foot. So for me, none of them, because I was very good with both of them.
Frank is such a... I didn't realize Frank was such a show-off, you know. Where's Dan gone? Where's Dan? Dan's gone. Where are you, Dan?
Dan left.
Dan.
Dan,
come back,
did
Dan.
We lose you, Dan?
There we go. I'm back. Fair enough. Fair enough.
You're here.
Right. I'm here.
We were saying
you. The batteries in my IFB ran out during that, so I have no idea what your answer was, Frank, but I'm sure it was as fascinating as ever. Right, next.
That was very good, and we were seeing only good things about you when you were off.
Well, you certainly not say that about me when
I'm
on.
He said goalkeepers were the hardest trainers in pre-season.
Oh, really? Yeah?
That's what he said.
That's what I missed. Okay.
Liar.
Here we go, then. Time to upset some people. Start with you, Shaka.
You have new batteries?
I've got my new batteries in. We're ready to go.
All right.
Better Premier League forward in their prime.
Ooh.
Drogba. Van Persie, Aguero.
And you're starting with me?
Let's start with you.
If I had to pick one, I'd go with Aguero. I also hasten to add, though, the single best 90 minutes I have played against as a striker was Didier Drogba. 1 year we played Chelsea at the Bridge and Ferrer got sent off after 10 or 11 minutes. And Didier Drogba was simply unplayable for the next 80. I've never seen one player dominate a game, one striker dominate a game and dominate a defense like that. But if I'm running my own club and I'm buying one player, I'm leaning Aguero.
Who were you playing for then, Shaq, at the time?
The mighty West Ham, Daniel.
Weren't hammering the year that year, no.
4-1 with 10 men.
Frank, which of those three?
For sure, I go for Drogba. I mean, that guy, I followed that guy in his beginning when he was playing in Le Mans and after in Guingamp. I talked to Marseille about him and the fact that he had a great future. And he definitely had, and he was a threat. I mean, the year that he played for Marseille and after for Chelsea really amazed me. The power that he had. After, I would go for Aguero. And Van Persie, he was a fine striker in a way that he had a finesse comparing to the others. But he's less a type of guy that I like. I like the Aguero. That he doesn't give up, that he's hard to cope with. Same than Drogba. It's different with Van Persie.
I didn't know you didn't like Van Persie, Frank.
He hates Van Persie.
I never said that he didn't like Van Persie.
You
never
said
that.
He gave
don't
up,
play the
you
journalist.
Like his personality. You don't like his Dutch. That's what I
heard. No, I said he has the finesse, but not same power as Drogba and Aguero. Don't put words in my mouth, please, Dan Thomas.
He said Van Persie's a soft touch.
Yeah.
And isn't strong enough to last in the Premier League. That's what I heard.
Yeah, that's exactly what I heard as well.
Oh my God.
He doesn't like his grey hair either. Okay. Ooh. It's a good question, actually. Frank, is defending set pieces really that difficult?
Well, it depends if you defend in zone or if you defend with individual marking. I always thought that if I was one day, and it would never happen, a coach, I will make sure the players are responsible and they will get a man each. But because I was so clever when I was playing, I wasn't marking players. I was on the near post, close to the 6-yard box to cut the curve of the ball. So not responsible for anything, anytime. Very clever.
Shaka?
I like how Frank says, because I was very clever when I was playing, as if to suggest that ever since he retired, the cleverness has left.
Well, he's working with us. His brain cells have definitely gone.
Yeah, that's a very good point, Dan. We have a tendency of dragging people down.
Down to our level. Soon he won't know his left from his right.
That's right. That's why he was so good with both feet, because he didn't know. He didn't know which one was left and which one was right.
Someone's asked, did Stevie keep talking after the stream ended last night? We got Stevie basically telling lots of old stories about the old doctors at Liverpool and about how they would have a whiskey at 9 a.m. and about how things have completely changed to when Stevie broke his jaw and they just put a wet sponge on it and then put him back out to play. Shaka told some tales as well. Frank, did you experience similar things?
Well, yes, I remember being elbowed in the training on the Stamford Bridge and getting needed 6 stitches on my just here above my just below my eye, and they put a little bit of ice, they put an injection, and they did that close to the training training pitch. I was very amazed that he did very well and that we don't see it, but a strange way of doing it. But you know, when we arrive in England with Vialli, Di Matteo and Zola, it's true that sometimes we look at each other and say, are you sure they invented football? Because, I mean, they don't really seem to take it seriously, you know what I mean? Where we try to nap, we try to stretch, we try to make sure that we have a massage, that we warm up properly, when those players, British players, don't really care. They just go for the fight, and they're happy too. Remember seeing John Terry training with short sleeve. And of course, when we saw the medical staff, they were absolutely fantastic people. And Mike Banks and some other people like Terry, the physio. I mean, they were absolutely fantastic. But I think they didn't have the help of the machines, of everything. That was very amateur, but we were okay with that. We dealt with that. Comparing to now, of course, it's different.
Final question. Since we have an ex-goalie and centre-back, what was the worst error or miscommunication that you had with your goalie or defender, specifically a shakastrophic moment that you can laugh at now?
Oh, jeez.
Does anything come to mind, Frank?
Oh, man.
Oh, me? Yes. I was playing for the national team, and during the coach speech before the game, he said to us, the guy, forget, avoid to give the ball to the goalkeeper because the pitch is very bouncy, so avoid that. And after like 10 minutes, I turned and I gave the ball to, it was Letizia, who played for Paris Saint-Germain and Nice. And he controlled the ball, he was okay, but after he tried to take on the players and missed it, and we conceded the goal, and I felt responsible for that. Yeah, that was a real mistake, because I should have kicked the ball in the stands, and we lost 1-0 against Russia in a very frozen, bouncy field.
But it's not your fault that the goalkeeper is an idiot.
No, that's my fault, because the coach said, don't give him the ball, and I gave him the ball. So that's my fault. I take it.
Shaka?
I can only think of one specifically. And this is back when I was playing for Newcastle. played, I remember we played away to Nottingham Forest, and I can't remember what season it was. Late on, ball over the top, I come chasing out, centre back comes running in, he has a swing at it, I pull out, we both just hit the ball ridiculously, and I think it was Brian Roy, Dutch fellow who used to play for us,
yeah.
Just walks in and taps the ball into the back of the net. That's the only one I could really remember.
Oh, that's still one, Shaka.
Yeah. I'm sure there were a lot more. There were a lot more.
That is it. Thank you very much. Robin van Persie, our special guest on the show tomorrow. It'll be interesting to talk to him with Frank. We'll be looking back, of course, at Real Madrid in action, and it's that Liverpool against Manchester City game as well.